Are we just waiting at this point, or?
I guess. I think people are starting to file in. How are you this morning, Vipin?
Hey, sorry for slow join.
Yeah, there are just too many things.
Good morning, Vipin.
Good morning, Mick.
All
I guess
right.
it's more of a morning for you than me. We are almost.
It is definitely morning for me.
8 o'clock on a Friday morning.
My favorite time of the year, yes.
The sun is shining over San Francisco Bay around heart.
Oh,
I hope not.
my desk faces east. And normally this time of year, that's not a problem because, well, it never is sunny in this area, so that's not a problem. But it's bright and sunny and shining right in my face this morning, and it's really disappointing that I had to actually close the windows to close the curtains to see anything. So this is a sad day. I had to get up early and I have to deal with closing off the sun.
Whining about good weather, man.
I know. Hey, I live in Oregon. We hate sunshine, right? We like to, crawl under rocks and be rained on. This is what we like. No cynicism there whatsoever. All right. Doobie doobie doobie.
Hi, this is Uma here. I just want to take a moment to introduce myself. I think some of you on the call would have been on me. I joined another call with Vipun on hyperledger identity. I just want to introduce myself. This is Uma, working for Accenture, located in Chicago. So with my interest in hyperledger, I just started attending the calls and see like where I can contribute.
Sounds good. Welcome. Are you
Thank
able
you.
To see the chat? I will post in the link for the meeting notes, and feel free to add yourself to the participant list.
Sure.
All right. Who else do we have on this morning?
Stan is here.
Sorry, what is that?
Oh, hey, Stan. And I heard Vipin. Ram, are you on? Todd?
I'm on.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Who else am I missing?
Marco Carvalho?
Marco, would you like to introduce yourself?
Saying it's a noisy environment and he's on mute.
Ah, no problem. All right. And we have one more that's a dial in, which might be me.
Me.
No.
212-841-241.
Oh, that's you? Okay. Got it, Vipin. All right. So plan for today is to remember all of the antitrust agreements do not make claims of anti-competitive nature. How's that? Preserve privacy and integrity of others' confidential information. Okay. Behave. That's more or less what it means. Right. So I wanted to continue the work that we've been doing on the paper. Pasted the link in there. And for those who are on Rocket Chat, I believe I already pasted that link to the paper earlier this morning. So you should be able to get it. So just as a little background on the paper, the intention is to start with the kind of concrete usage that Vipin provided for us and use that as a kind of reference point for doing both an analysis of kind of the existing Hyperledger platforms and how what capabilities they provide for privacy and confidentiality, but also to look at what characteristics would be of future technology that we'd like to be able to use. So in a heart spin, kind of straddling the fence on the analysis piece, but I think he really wants to go off and design new protocols, right, Hart?
Well, yeah, doesn't everybody?
Of course. I'm sure everything that we have just works right, though, so. Last time we started through the functional requirements. So if you want to make a quick run through the abstract usage, let's just review the requirements that we have and then move into documenting some of the characteristics of the ideal system implementation. And that should give us a way of doing a basis for doing analysis for the rest of it. So the usage is basically, and I will butcher Vipin's very good description of things. It's basically that there's a liability that exists between two parties. That liability can be sold to, or at least transfer to others in exchange for good. This is a common situation in supply chain. There's certain visibility that exists between the original holders of the liability and between the supplier and factors to whom the supplier may transfer that liability. So there's certain rights and privileges about who can transfer, about what information can be seen, and when that information can be seen. So there needs to be a public commitment to the liability. The details of that contract are originally preserved exclusively between the supplier and the buyer. Participants can choose what information they can disclose. And the right to disclose allows us to actually expose some information between the supplier and the factors. Right to disclose is transferred. What else did we have in there? Identity of the bids and the bidders is kept confidential to the supplier, although there needs to be a commitment to the bid. And that information is as confidential between the pairwise relationship. What else? Transfer of ownership and transfer of control rights. All right. So that's the gist of it. Was there anything that you think we are missing? Vipin, I'm going to ask you this specifically. Does that look like the right set of functional requirements? Or are there any that we should be adding to that?
I don't believe so. I'd have to read it a little more carefully, but I'll let you know if it's missing. I don't think so.
Okay. Anyone else think of anything we should add to that list?
Do we want to then do an ideal system implementation? Do we want to go over that today with that list in mind?
Yep, that was the plan.
Awesome.
So, Hart, do you want to take the lead on that discussion, and I'll document while you talk?
Sure. So basically, I've talked about this before, so some of you probably remember this. But basically, the idea of an ideal system is how would this be built if we had a trusted third party, right? If we had a trusted party, then we can sort of design the system with this trusted party, and it will be easy to analyze the security properties we get, right? And then we can convert it to a distributed system where there's no trusted third party. And if we get our proofs together, then we can show that the security properties of the distributed system are the same as those of the system with the trusted third party. And this allows us to, you know, rigorously analyze security because the attacks translate immediately, right? If you have an attack on the distributed system, and it's an attack on the trusted third party system. And this is much, much better for things like analyzing privacy and confidentiality, because attacks that are very difficult to model, like traffic analysis attacks or things like that, are much, much easier to model in the trusted third party setting. You can kind of see how they work. Do people follow this?
Makes sense. And in the ideal system implementation, are you talking specifically about the trusted third party model, or does that include the extension to the distributed system?
Yeah, so the ideal model is you have some kind of trusted third party, right?
Okay. So maybe we should just call it out in the headline itself, the ideal trusted third party system implementation.
Yeah, you can call it out if you want to point that out. There are a couple of the only other odd restriction is that you want to assume that an adversary can see communication, but you're probably assuming that anyway. So an adversary can see communication between a third party, between this trusted party and players in the system.
Why would we need to assume that, assuming that, you know, we have ability to do things like, you know, TLS and so forth?
So that's part of the model, right? The adversary, if you use a TLS connection between you and the trusted third party, the adversary will just see that you sent it an encrypted message.
Yep.
And so this is to model things like traffic analysis.
Got it. So it doesn't mean that they can see it in the clear.
It means that they see the bits go across the wire, basically.
Got it.
So obviously, if they're encrypted, yeah.
I still don't get what the trusted third party has to do with it. I mean, you're basically modeling some abstract construct there, which is, you know.
The trusted third party gives us a lot more.
The ideal system is an abstract construct.
Right. That's true.
Vipin, I think where my interpretation where Hart is going is that is the reference model to which alternate distributed systems, including the existing systems or anything new we propose, are going to be compared against.
Right. That's exactly right, Rob.
That's the best case that we can do. So can, you know, if we can define the ideal case, then we can use that as a reference against which we check whether, you know, we are as close to the ideal as possible.
So Vipin, what we're going to do is we're going to define this ideal case. And then
the ideal case, but does it have to be called a trusted third party? You can achieve all this without a trusted third party. I mean, okay.
Right.
You're saying that.
We know you can, but the point is the system will be simpler. It will be very, very simple if we have a trusted third party, right? And it will allow us to easily analyze what exact security we get. And that's kind of the point. We will design a distributed system with the same properties, but the issue is it will be very hard for us to analyze exactly what security guarantees we get. But what we want to do is we want to show that any adversary that can attack the distributed system can attack the trusted third-party system in the same way. And this implies that basically if there is an attack, it also exists on the trusted third-party system or the ideal system. But the ideal system is very simple and it's very easy to analyze. So we can, you know, look at that and see exactly what attacks there are. And this gives us a very good and convincing way to model security.
I've heard this described before, but I didn't realize that the ideal system would be called a trusted third party.
It's usually just called ideal system. Model. Like the people just wanted to put the trusted third party in there for to make it clear, I guess, if you weren't used to this kind of model.
Okay.
The trusted third party becomes essentially an oracle.
Yes, it is. Right. That's exactly what it is. It's an honest and not curious oracle. That it's a magical.
Vipin, the reason I wanted to mention trusted third party is, you know, if you're familiar with crypto research, then, you know, you don't need that extra tag. But someone else reading this paper shouldn't misinterpret, you know, the intent behind the ideal system, right?
We don't want you to have to read 10 UC model papers before you can understand this paper. Which, by the way, I would recommend everyone in this group reads some of those papers, but that's kind of beside the point.
So Todd, you had a question?
No, I've not heard this term used before, and sorry, I come from a different background, and so I'm just curious about why this is ideal. I mean, this is handled in existing systems, but
yeah,
I don't know what makes it ideal. Yes, yeah.
Well, it's ideal.
Semantics.
It gives us the functionality we want in kind of the simplest way possible, right? And it assumes things that are not true in practice, which is why it's called ideal, right?
So, Hart, can I give just an example of this?
Sure.
So the details of, again, sort of going back to, so in the ideal system, the trusted third party manages the details of the contract between the supplier and the liability between the supplier and the buyer. And that trusted third party enforces a set of policies for visibility to that contract. Is that how we're thinking of the ideal system?
I think we should not get hung up with the term ideal. Maybe we can use a reference or something.
Well, like, I mean, the whole point is
I'm okay with that.
It's an abstraction, right? I mean, in the sense that, I mean, when you start talking about parties, then of course they're not blind. They can see stuff, you know. I mean, somehow you're introducing this actor into the thing, which is, anyway, go ahead. I get what you're driving at, and, you know, obviously the abstraction. So I get it.
Yeah, I was going to say, just think of it as if you had a third party that you trusted completely, how would you build the system? And what would its characteristics be? So that's why I'm saying this is that if I had this trusted third party, I could go to that trusted third party as a buyer and a seller, and I could say, here's the contract between us. We want you to mediate access to this contract, and here's the following characteristics that we want for access that we want you to enforce. You may answer questions about its existence to anyone. You may provide details of the contract to the supplier and the buyer.
I don't know whether that's true. The first statement is not true.
Yeah, I agree.
You can't.
In what sense? For the purposes of analysis, we are asserting the existence of a third party that is totally trusted. That's how we do the analysis. Exists in reality.
Mick, it was the issue that information is disclosed publicly. There's probably a limited subset of who this information would be disclosed to.
Well, yeah. Okay, fine. So we fix our policies for who. I'm not saying that.
I get the
point of the fact that the existence is irrelevant, right? We go back to our functional requirements for it.
So the idea
is that the ideal system becomes this perfectly trusted thing. So you have to have an operation in the ideal system, which is some sense of register the existence of this agreement. And the ideal system has to be able to And you have a set of policies that you provide to it. So that's the operation. So there's some information that has to be disclosed based on the communication between the bearers of the contract, the creators of the contract, and the trusted third party. So there's a little information that's disclosed, but not much. The third party then, whatever policies we decide are appropriate for disclosure, and that's where the functional requirements come in, the third party implements those perfectly. That's the point.
Fine. Ram said, let's not get hung up on this. I mean, I get the whole, you know, the emerging properties of the system constituting a sort of a trusted third party. Okay, fine.
And whether or not you need to have external communication with that, I think that was Ram's question. You know, tied to your chat question, whether it's third party, there is some entity that you trust wholly, and for the purpose, it doesn't have to exist in reality. It's the ideal system, right? And how would you interact with that? And what are the expectations for that if you really want to implement the perfect system?
Fine. So let's get on with it. With this.
Hart, are you still there?
Hart doesn't have.
Yeah, sorry. It just took me a second to unclick mute.
Oh.
I've been here the whole time. Yeah. Vipin and Todd, do you guys understand kind of why we're doing this now?
Yeah. I'm just. My only issue is that ideal comes from a particular perspective, right, or context. So.
Yeah, so this is just a, if it's just a word, this is just a cryptographic term that people use to to call it this.
And I get it.
They don't use such a third-party business. Anyway, forget about this. Let's go on with it.
Oh, they absolutely do use this trusted third-party business in the crypto system analysis.
Okay, fine.
So I'm just one question I'm curious about is just, this is how things work today, right? People use a trusted third party. So what we're really describing is current reality. Is that correct?
Not at all. That's the whole problem.
No.
We might ascribe properties to this third party that are not reasonable of any person.
Okay.
This is just a way for us to exactly delineate what properties we want in the system in kind of the simplest way possible.
Okay.
Can I add my interpretation? Maybe it would be easier. But it's a mathematical or scientific approach where you map the problem to a different domain, which is easier to reason about. So it's this ideal system is not real, it's not practical, but it's simpler to reason and it matches the problem perfectly. But now we can reason about it and map it back into reality and solve the problems more structured.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Are we, Vipin, are we clear on this?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I had no real questions about it, really.
I just want to make sure everybody kind of understands the idea.
See, but you've already sown, those words have already sown doubts in people like Todd, because he's saying, isn't this correspond to reality today? Because trusted third party is used in other contexts in that sense, like DTCC or blah, blah, blah. So already the use of that term confuses. Of course, we realize it's an abstraction through which we model the ideal behavior, and then we try to map it into a distributed system. Yes, but I didn't realize until you said that this is a term commonly employed in cryptography. Okay, fine. But it's in financial circles, trusted third party has a different meaning. See, that's the whole problem.
All right, guys, let's keep going.
It corresponds to reality. It doesn't correspond to abstraction.
Can we call it a trusted oracle then, and will that make everybody happy?
Yes, okay. But, I think we should just... sort of comment on it, Ram said, even if you say it in the header, just make one line comment saying that what is this? It is an abstraction, doesn't exist in reality.
Yes, that should definitely be included.
Is this an oracle or more like a notary?
It's an oracle.
My impression of oracles is that you can only get information from them. You can't push information into them, but.
So an oracle is generally defined, it's kind of a black box function, right? So you send it something, it sends you something back, and you can't really see how it computed it. So a simple example, are you familiar with random oracles, Todd? No worries.
No.
Okay. So a random oracle is basically how some people model like hash functions. So the idea of a random oracle is you send it something and it outputs a truly random string back to you. And it's like a function that you give it an input. If you give it the same input, it always gives you the same output. But if you give it a new input, it outputs something, you know, completely random. And the idea is that's the whole model. You can't like look in its guts, basically. Like for something like SHA, right, that's an actual hash function, you can, you know, look in its guts and see kind of how things get evaluated, right?
Right, yeah.
But for when people make a random Oracle assumption, they assume that, you know, you can't do that, that you just have this totally random function and you can't look in the guts. So that's what's called a random Oracle. And so for a more general Oracle, it can do kind of arbitrary computations, like what you tell it, whatever you want it to, right? So we could have an Oracle that, you know, like takes, you know, that takes in transactions and anonymizes them. And then you, like an example for blockchain would be like a mixing again, Oracle, right?
Again, a confusion between the cryptographic terms Oracle and the way the Oracle term is used in blockchain.
How is the Oracle term used in blockchain?
Well, you know,
source of, so, at least from my perspective, it's a source of deterministic information, right? So whenever I ask a question, I always get the same answer.
Not really. I mean, if I ask for a price of IBM, you know, it will give me the price of IBM at this point. But if I ask the price of IBM next second, you know, it's somehow connected to the external world in a very secure cryptographic way, at least you can reason about that. Anyway, so the whole point is these terms have different meaning in different domains, and that's what's causing this, you know, discussion amongst us. That's all. I mean, I'm not averse to the use of the word Oracle in the cryptographic sense.
Yes. So.
All right. I guess we're spending a lot of time on the semantics. Maybe we should get to the meat of it.
Which is what I was suggesting before.
This isn't bad though. I mean, we need to know when, like, we're going to write something in kind of a cryptographic language, and people that aren't, you know, academic cryptographers are going to read this. So we do need to know when we're picking terms that there will be ambiguity for. So this is good. It's good to know this. And like Vipin, if you can note and comment these things, that will probably be immensely useful.
Yeah, I think if you can use that trusted third party thing, as long as you qualify, like I said before, we just say, you know, this is an ideal system. It's not, this is meant to, it's an abstract model of an ideal system. That's it. I mean, we are all familiar with that.
Yeah, okay.
So unfortunately, I'm not in a situation, like you said, Vipin's iPhone cannot type too fast.
That's okay.
Right. My problem is this blockage of docs. Anyway, I'll try.
Can we set up a Hyperledger Tor relay for Vipin?
Yeah, probably. all right, let's go.
Anyway, so yes. So I guess... So we've got a paragraph description of this. So now we want to think about, we have these functional requirements, right? How would we build this system if we had this like magical third party, right? Well, what would probably happen, right? Participants would submit the bids to the trusted third party, right? Then the trusted third party could send the bids.
So you're talking about the last part of the problem, which is the bids, or are you starting from the beginning?
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant the, well, let's start from the beginning. So how should we, what should be the first step, right? So do we want the, so the are we assuming that the contract C already exists?
Yes, it's been exchanged. It's been arrived at somehow external to us right now.
Okay, so maybe the first step is like C and B, is the supplier and buyer send C to the trusted third party, right?
Yes.
This is also, by the way, just to make sure I'm clear, I understand this business case. This is invoice factoring, right?
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah.
So the contract includes both the invoice and the purchase order, and maybe even the some other things about the shipping, because it's a three-way match normally.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And as well, both the supplier and the buyer have to agree to even go through this process, right? So there's an agreement here at some point?
So there are three things here, right? One is actually the agreement between the supplier and buyer to exchange goods for money. And the supplier send the buyer goods, and there's some kind of a proof of that. So that is one part of this. Now you're talking about a meta agreement, which is that they agreed to participate with this in this particular blockchain system. Is that what you're talking about?
They agree that the both buyer and the supplier both agree to allow the invoice to be factored.
I don't know that the buyer has to agree. Because what if I'm the supplier?
That's a good point. The seller may only have to do this because the buyer still has the obligation, no matter who holds the invoice.
Yeah. Because I need cash fast.
Right.
You know, I don't care whether my buyer agrees or not. I mean, it may all depend on the actual master agreement between them. In the end, like. Obviously, this is a commercial transaction. It's not like some existing in a void. But the point is that we are.
For the purposes of the analysis for this discussion, we don't need to go into that level of detail. It up a little bit. What's the simple thing?
Yeah.
The simple thing is the supplier and buyer submit the contract. For the purposes of this exercise, the implication of submission of the contract is that the supplier has the right to contact factors.
Yes.
Right. And so then the supplier is going to, do we want to make it another step for the supplier to contact factors, or do we want factors to be automatically contacted?
No. You have to, the supplier only releases it to a subset of the factors that he has a relationship with.
It has to be explicit.
They have to be implicit.
All right. So the supplier is going to tell the trusted third party, right?
Yes. This is my lesson.
It's going to tell the trusted third party to send the details of the contract to a certain number of factors, right?
Yes. Or they may even do it one by one. So
they can iterate that step, right? Yeah. So this step is totally iterable, right?
Yes.
And then the factors will send back a copy, you know, if the factors can send back a yes or no, right?
Well, not just yes or no. They'll also add their, whatever they're bidding.
Yeah.
Or rather, offering, or whatever you want to call it, bid and offer. Okay, it's like they are actually saying, I will buy this invoice if you give me, I can pay so many basis points less than what it's really worth.
Right.
So just to get this clear, in this particular use case, is this a bidding model, or does the supplier basically say, here's what I'm willing to discount it to, and then the iteration is that it changes the discount? Just curious.
No. The the buyer is saying that, I mean, sorry, the factor, or in this case, it's forfeitor. I don't know whether it's a factor or a forfeitor, who's saying that, yes, I'm going to offer you this much.
So it's an auction, effectively.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a market.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
But yeah, the market may not be price-driven, completely price-driven. You know, it may not be like, oh, I'll choose the lowest bid.
Right. I get it.
It may be more complex than that. The supplier will apply his criteria, whatever the criteria. The factor, first of all, will apply the criteria. That is, do I even want to bid on this? That's a separate process. It is not certain that if I submit my invoices, it's not just a single invoice. It's usually a collection of invoices, purchase orders, and other material that constitutes the contract. And the supplier may, and the forfeitor may decide, no, I don't want to bid on this because there's not enough, the buyers are, not trustworthy. The supplier is not trustworthy. The amounts are not large enough. You know, whatever the criteria, they may have a whole bunch of criteria. So that, it passes through that filter, gets to them, then they decide commercially how much they want to bid. They may actually do some modeling or calculations to come up with a number, and then they put that in. And then other forfeiters do not see what the person, what the bid was done. Only the supplier sees those bids, and then then that supplier chooses one of them.
Okay, so
it's a closed bid auction then, basically.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, Mick, go ahead.
I'm just trying to keep us at the right level of detail on this. So I want to capture the notion of a closed bid auction up above in the abstract usage. So what I've got right now for Vipin, since you can't see the document, supplier and buyer submit the contract to the trusted third party. Submission implies that the supplier has the right to offer the contract to factors. Two, supplier tells the trusted third party to send the details of contract to one or more factors. The step is iterable so that the contract can be sent to multiple factors. Specifically, the TTP does not disclose to a factor the identity of any other factors. This is the closed bid aspect of it. Any factor may submit a bid on a contract to the TTP. The TTP informs the supplier about the factor's bid. Is that sufficient for this?
About the factor's bids, right?
Right, yeah. The closed portion of it means it's the bids. Who participates is a separate issue.
So yes, this is... this is mostly sufficient, but we need to model in some of the properties, right? So we specifically say the TTP does not disclose to a factor the identity of any other factors, right? But the supplier is telling the TTP to send details of the contract to one or more factors, right? So
yeah.
So if I can watch traffic, right, then I can immediately see who the TTP, if I see a supplier send a message to the TTP, right? And then the TTP sends a message to particular factors, right? I can kind of assume what's going on, right? And this is, if you look at this is very simple to analyze and see in this model, right? And if you tried to convert this system to a blockchain, you'd have the exact same problem where, how can you stop a third party from seeing which factors the supplier is trying to talk to, right? Does this make sense to everybody?
Yeah, you're talking about side channel traffic analysis attack. Okay, fine.
So this happens in this ideal system as a side channel kind of attack that's relatively easy.
That's because because you assumed complete transparency to the outside world on traffic analysis.
Right, but Vipin, this would also be an attack on just about any blockchain system that, any naive blockchain system that you make, this would happen, right?
Well, that's where I have news for you that for Corda, it doesn't happen.
Yes, but Corda, if you change this, if you change the model, right, so that if you change this ideal model a little bit, then Corda will still satisfy it.
And oh, by the way, Corda does have a notary service that does expose some of this information.
I mean, Corda practically has this ideal trusted third party. It's the notary system.
The notary may or may not see. Anyway, let's not go into the details of that stuff. But you know, there are validating notaries and non-validating. There's all kinds of stuff there that we don't need to go into. But there are ways of getting around it anyway. So
okay. So Hart. So coming back to your observation about information leakage.
Yes.
Should we change the description of the ideal system to avoid that? And how would we do that?
Well, absolutely, right? So we could, for instance, we could have the contract be sent. We could have a message be sent to all factors, right? If a message is sent to all factors, right, and it's a dummy message to factors that are not included, right, then this would get around this problem, right?
Yeah.
And this
you're obviously going to make sure that the size of the messages are similar with padding and all
right,
kinds of other
right,
stuff.
Right, right, right. Yep. Exactly.
So that, yeah, but you still disclose to the other factors now that, you know, the seller, the supplier is engaged in. Well, I guess
you don't know what they're engaged in, but you know they are engaged.
Okay.
And this is a good observation, and this is very hard to it's very hard to not leak this information, right? That someone is doing something. and this is why we're using this ideal system, right? Is because you can model things like this. If you try to model this traditionally without an ideal system, then your model, if you want to say no information is leaked, well, it's going to be impossible to prove because there is information leaked. So that's this observation really gets to the heart of why we're doing this ideal system representation.
No, obviously the abstraction works. That's for sure. All we were quibbling about was the use of, you know, whatever, the terms, not that fact that such a model should exist. Anyway.
No, I understand. Right.
And I guess the other question the point maybe that of bringing up Corda was, is the trusted third party indeed the ideal system, or is there an even better system in which that there is no third party?
Well, the third party is the trusted oracle is kind of the most powerful tool you can possibly have.
It's not that. It's the observability of the interaction that makes it the information leaked. Not the fact that there is whatever, you know, some abstraction there.
Yes.
It is the observability of that. So again, going back to even to Hyperledger Fabric channels, I mean, are they observable? I guess so, if it's on the open internet, right?
Yes, they're observable, and yes, they're completely observable by any endorser.
Yes.
Yep, you're getting to some Yeah, and, I mean, you're exactly
and
right.
That's why we're doing the ideal system, so that we can have that discussion.
Yeah, so you can look at this and you can say, hey, well, this is, you know, there are many systems for which this channel's approach would be difficult, right? Because you know, unless you do these things like sending dummy messages, you know, the traffic for some problems might reveal too much information. So, and basically, this is the Tor people found out all of this out, basically, a lot of it the hard way in the last decade. Kind of like the blockchain community really is going to just have to like relearn all of the lessons that Tor learned in this regard. But again, this ideal model allows us to like very explicitly see and point these things out, whereas they might not be so easy to see or analyze if we were looking at the actual blockchain system.
Okay. So the visibility of the information, the traffic, which exposes a side channel, will reveal the parties unless you send dummy messages to everybody. Okay.
Well, it could reveal worse than the parties, right? I mean, just by looking at my transaction frequency and my transaction patterns, you might be able to figure out like what kind of deals I'm making or things like that, right?
Or I'm in distress.
Exactly.
Because I'm selling off all my all the
good. Or who you are, right?
Yep. I'm giving a talk next week where I made some slides about this, where just by looking at someone's transactions and who they're with, you can basically determine who a person is. So I took my credit card transactions from a week and took out all the amounts, and you just look at who they're with and you can almost de-anonymize me.
Yes. I mean, in fact, I was just reading a paper on, there's this guy, Muthukrishnan, from Rochester University, who's written this thing about this particular subject, you know. I think it's a kind of an important paper about the K anonymity versus you know, some other measure by injecting some generalities into the exposed data that you could basically take out some of those side channels, like for example the one that you just said, right? I mean, to anonymize your credit card transactions, if you took out, you know, basically it was trying to create a table with certain types of information and then trying to make it anonymous by taking out, by generalizing certain columns. And then it was proven that even that would basically reveal information about and help people de-anonymize things. This was from the healthcare field. Anyway, so...
You're exactly right, Vip. But I mean, we even... we have a paper out of our lab where we wrote about kind of the hopelessness of some of this privacy stuff in an online setting. But I mean, I just linked a paper that is kind of, it's about...
Is it in Rocket Chat?
Yeah, no, I linked it in Zoom, but I'll put it in Rocket Chat for you.
Yeah, because otherwise...
Yeah, no worries.
I'll stick it in the meeting notes as well.
So I'll put it in the Architecture Working Group Rocket Chat. It's not letting me paste. There we go. But yeah, so this is kind of a paper that analyzes, you know, what you can do for broadcasting, for, you know, for maintaining some of these anonymity and traffic analysis papers.
Yeah.
And for many cases, like, if you don't need, you know, instant transaction. So for some of the cases where you need like instant massive throughput, this is impossible. But if your transaction case can be a little slower, and for something like factors, right, you're not going to need like you know, microsecond confirmation, right? If I have to wait like 5 minutes for my factor deal to go through, that's probably okay, right?
Yeah.
So, and if we allow ourselves this kind of like latency, which is, you know, fine on a human time scale, then we can do some of these techniques that people talk about. So,
yeah.
But you're exactly right. These privacy issues are huge. That's why we do this ideal system thing, so we can look at these problems.
Yeah. So we are more or less at time. If I can encourage everyone to go back through both what we captured for the text in the section and the rest of the paper, and we'll continue this work in 2 weeks. Feel free to add notes or comments or expand on anything that's in there.
I just kind of one quick question on these.
Sounds good.
Does it make sense to list sort of what the, I guess we do list of functional requirements. Maybe I just need to go through that in more detail. Never mind.
What was that, Todd?
I missed the fact that some of the stuff that I was thinking of was already captured here in the functional requirements, and so.
Oh yeah, and by the way, that's a section. Please hack on that.
Okay.
Right. So I need to capture your notion of closed bid system up above, okay, unless you want to add it in the abstract usage thing. But by all means, you know, feel free to edit.
Yeah, I'll be happy to do that. And these, as far as I know, these systems can operate in both closed and open. So all right.
Okay. All right, then I will say thank you for today. It was a great discussion. Just to be clear, I think the points that you're raising, Vipin and Todd, about the ambiguity in our language and how we clarify that are absolutely critical. So keep making them. You know, so
we're not thank shy. You.
I'm completely aware of that, and I'm encouraging you to not be shy. So I think
we're not cryptographers either.
Yeah. So I think that's what makes this group so interesting is that we have this mix of kind of theoretical security systems and practical usages that we can bring to bear on it. So let's make sure that we write something up that's clear and useful. So again, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks everybody.
All right. Have a great Friday, everyone. Bye. A great weekend.
All right,
ciao.
Enjoy the sunny weather.